Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Twin Bills, the Red Sox podcast from the sports department of the Providence Journal, featuring Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch, along with sports editor Bill Corey. Now, Twin Bills.
Hello and welcome to this week's Twin Bills Red Sox podcast. This is Bill Corey, sports editor of the Providence Journal. And Bill, it seems like every time we're doing this lately, the Red Sox have chipped another game off the wild card lead. They're down to 5.5 as of Tuesday morning when we are recording this. So I think we're going to have to put off our post-mortem obituary edition maybe a little bit longer. Again, I don't think it's likely, but you know, they are sort of trending in the right direction after a 6-2 road trip out west.
Bill, our faithful listeners know that it's been since mid-August that you've wanted to close that back cover of the book.
Just get it over with.
And write the eulogy on the 2019 Red Sox season. I know a lot of fans share that feeling as well. If you go on social media, it's, I quit on this team a long time ago, yeah. Bring on the Patriots. There's a lot of similar sentiment out there, but I think the players might disagree. I think Alex Cora might disagree. Still 25 games left, and still, as you said, a sliver of a playoff hope here.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know, a 6-2 road trip out west really helped the cause. Again, it's tough when you've got three teams ahead of you and you need them to cooperate and lose key games while you win. But you're sort of doing your part here, and it's September 3rd today. And
it's Tuesday, but it feels like Monday.
It does. And, you know, the leaves are going to start to change soon, and our thoughts are switching to football. But you're right, the Red Sox aren't giving up on this season quite yet. And, you know, realistically, you've got 25 games to play, and larger leads have been lost in 25 games.
Red Sox fans would be quick to remind you of that. You know, certainly Red Sox fans of a certain vintage. you go back to the 78 team, that's the one that comes up all the time.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Remy, famously bitter over that 78 team. His popular sort of saying or phrase is, we won 99 games and we're a bunch of bums.
Right.
You know, because obviously, they didn't get into the postseason, losing the one-game playoff with the Yankees. They had a 14-game lead in July that was whittled down. Now, obviously, that being in July, you have a lot more time to cut into it.
Yeah.
And that's why when the Red Sox lost 8 games in a row at the end of July and the start of August, the temptation was to declare this over because time was growing short, and it's grown even shorter now.
Well, you know, I think what's impressive here about this recent little run and the fact that they're still kind of bobbing and weaving in the race is that, you know, they're a little bit banged up. They don't obviously have Chris Sale. David Price finally came back and gave them a couple of innings a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're finding a way to score runs, and one of the reasons they're doing that is because Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers have still been just tearing the cover off the ball. And Bogaerts in particular, we should probably make note of, became the first Red Sox shortstop since Nomar Garciaparra to hit 30 home runs in what is really a career year, fantastic year for him. I think that it's sort of getting underplayed because of the performance of the team overall. But this is really a season for the ages for Bogaerts.
Yeah, we've spoken about it a lot, the fact that, you know, he signs a big contract before the year, and what is that going to do to a player? You know, we've seen some other guys sort of go into a little bit of a shell or press and think that they need to do even more. If anything, it seems to have made him more comfortable. He's taken on a leadership role this year. He's certainly proven capable of hitting in the middle of the lineup. Last year, set a new career high for home runs with 23. He's blown that away this season. By far, his best statistical year as a pro. If you're a Red Sox fan, you look and you think, well, he's only 26. You know, great days to come.
Sure.
Great days that he's having right now. You know, and also, I think you look at August in particular, and you look at what J.D. Martinez has done over the last month.
Absolutely,
he's really caught fire here at this point. You know, and I think I had a friend say to me over the weekend, you know, you look at the top four, five, six guys in this lineup and what they've done over the course of the year. You got Mookie Betts on track for 140 runs. Devers and Bogarts, the way they've emerged. Martinez, his numbers at the end are going to be really good, you know, based on what he did in August, if he can carry that into September. Benintendi seems to have found a role, a comfortable spot in the fifth hole.
Right.
You're going to look and you're going to see the top of this lineup. Christian Vasquez as well is having a career year. If they do end up missing the playoffs, it's going to be a shame because a lot of those efforts are going to go to waste.
Well, it'll be the pitching, really, and it's something we've been talking about and critical of all season long. I mean, the offense really has carried them, and the pitching really has been a huge disappointment. And speaking of pitching, let's we touched upon David Price a little bit, but you know he pitched. I want to say Sunday.
Sunday, correct.
It was his first start since
in a month
back from his elbow inflammation, his wrist cyst, right?
Right,
and. You know, 45 pitches, and I think that was a little disappointing because I think the Red Sox had said that they were expecting to get closer to 80. So I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if it was just maybe he was feeling something or maybe they just they wanted to take it easy with him. But you're gonna need David Price, especially without Chris Sale in the rotation here for the rest of the month. You're going to need David Price to sort of look like the David Price of old.
I think it was two things. First, you have a cautious manager. Alex Cora has been a pretty cautious manager over the course of his almost 2 years now in Boston. Any sort of ache or pain or someone coming back off the IL, he generally errs on the side of caution.
Yeah.
He'll either keep the player out the next day or keep a pitch count short or whatever it may be. I think it's also an acknowledgement of reality here, the fact that they don't have many starting pitchers right now, and they can't have a setback here from David Price. That stretch of off days that they had, you know, that seemed to be so frequent, it was like they were on a Monday, Friday, you know, 4-day weekend schedule there for a while. That's going to go away here in September. And so you have Rick Porcello, Eduardo Rodriguez, Nathan Eovaldi, who's getting closer to being fully stretched out, and David Price, who, you know, sort of at the start of that journey. His next time out, you'd probably hope to get 5 innings out of him. Expanded rosters allow you to go into the bullpen a little bit more, but it's not necessarily something that you want to do. You're already sort of committed to doing it every fifth day. You don't really have another starter.
Right.
You could have Brian Johnson out there for 4 or 5 innings if you really want to, but he's really the only other guy who's stretched out, who's made semi-regular starts for you. So I think that's more an acknowledgement of, you know, not wanting to push Price too far. I would imagine that you might see a little bit more of that in his next start. But I think it's just looking at the reality of the situation. Their starting pitching all year hasn't really been good. And now they're injured on top of it. And so I think it just sort of, you know, it's sort of a nod to that and the realization that they still have another month to get through. And, you know, if by some miracle they make it to October, they're going to need these guys for then as well.
You know, what a difference a year makes. You know, a year ago, you expand the rosters every year. You know, you had such a big lead. It was a chance to give some veterans a rest and some position players a rest. This year is different, Bill, because you're still sort of in it and you're still playing meaningful games. And I'm sure it's going to be sort of challenging for Alex Cora to figure out, well, okay, when do I sort of throw the Paw Sox guys in there,
right?
Because I'm still trying to win these games.
Right.
You know, and if in the unlikely event that you actually do get into the wild card game, then, you know, you don't want a bunch of gassed ball players because you've ridden them hard for the last month of the season. So,
right.
You know, it's a different deal for Cora this year because, you know, because of where you are in the standings.
No, no question. Last year you had, you know, basically you were going to make the playoffs from like July and
on. Oh, my God. From really? July 4th, you were going to make the playoffs.
I mean, you were looking at it and you were thinking.
Right. It was just a matter of how many games you're going to win. Are you going to win the division? All that.
They just had such a massive lead in the wild card. Yeah. At one point, I want to say there was something like 86 and 36. Like it was,
yeah, it was
you
nuts.
Know, 50 games over in August.
Right.
And you're thinking, okay, they've already got the wild card. You obviously want to win the division. You want to be in the ALDS mm-hmm. and you want to have home field and all that good stuff. So they did enough to do that. The four-game sweep of the Yankees, I think, going into August, pretty much sewed up the AL East. In my mind, anyway, I thought that it was over after that weekend. You're up 9.5 games,
right.
And it's you're pretty comfortable
yeah.
from there. And so you look at over the last month, and you had Chris Sale on and off the IL. You had Eduardo Rodriguez effectively shut down. He didn't really play a role
right.
in the playoffs. You had Eovaldi brought in via trade. Porcello was having a decent year. Those guys were sort of your starters, and you kind of went ahead and went forward, and you were able to scale them back and give the position guys days off and make sure that they were sharp as well. This is probably much more typical of what most Major League Baseball teams face
right.
going into September is you're going to have to ride the studs, and I think the games that you have that maybe end up non-competitive, whether you're way ahead or way behind, that's when you see the roster expansion come in. You're going to see some of these pitchers that you brought up, maybe some of these guys off the bench. You're going to try to get some of the regulars off their feet, and save them to either battle for another day or just have them rest and enjoy a comfortable victory.
So let's just take a quick look at some of the guys they brought up here. Velasquez is back with the team. Lakins is back with the team. Gorkis Hernandez, a veteran outfielder, is up there.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Travis, who's has been with the team on and off for most of the year.
Yep.
No Ruzne Castillo, Bill.
No, that would put them over the third right. threshold of the competitive balance tax. They are not going to do that.
Right. But, some decent players, but nobody who's going to. I don't think there's any hot prospects you're looking at in this class.
No, the closest thing would be to that is if they eventually if they activate Michael Chavis off the IL.
Yeah,
he experienced some soreness in his side.
Right.
At Pawtucket. He was trying to rehab a left shoulder injury. He was supposed to be evaluated at Fenway Park on Monday. I assume we're going to get an update on him later today.
Sure. Sure.
And the other guys. The sort of prospect guys are already there. You're
right.
looking at Darwin's and Hernandez,
right.
who's been there for a little while.
Yeah.
Josh Taylor, who's emerged as a big part of that bullpen.
Yeah.
Someone who's thrown some critical innings for them. Mm-hmm. But the guys that they've called up, Gorkis Hernandez is sort of a journeyman fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder. Might be able to take J.D. Martinez off his feet if he starts a game in right field against mm-hmm. a left-handed pitcher. Juan Centeno is a third catcher. Guy who could give Christian Vasquez a blow every once in a while, maybe. The pitchers, you've seen them all before, whether it's Travis Lakins or Hector Velasquez, who else? Who else did they bring up? It was Velasquez, Lakins. Oh, Ryan Weber.
And Weber, right.
Ryan Weber.
Right, who's spent plenty of time up there.
Who's been there
right.
as well. So those guys, Lakins is probably a multi-inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
Weber was a starter, can give you... three, four innings in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Velasquez as well can probably give you two or three innings. Another guy in that group was Julie Chassin. Who they just picked up, who was released by the Brewers in August. He made 19 starts for them, had a 5.79 ERA. He's the type of guy that you might see eat innings. Whether they're up eight or down eight.
Right.
On the fifth or sixth inning, you might see him out there trying to give the bullpen a rest. Who knows? You might see him make a spot start here at
sure.
some point.
Sure.
If they're in a run of games where they play 14 in a row or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A couple names who you might have expected to see, but you probably won't. Tanner Houck is one right-handed pitcher. They're going to send him to the Arizona Fall League, and he's going to start there.
Yep.
He was working in relief out of the bullpen in Pawtucket at the end of the season. And Bobby Dalbec, who was brought up to Pawtucket from Portland at the end of the year, he was Portland's team MVP. Last year, he was the Carolina League MVP at Class A. So he's had two really good seasons in a row in the minors. I don't expect him to get a call up because you look at the Red Sox roster and you think, well, where's the playing time for him?
Right.
You're going to play Sam Travis against left-handed pitching. Mitch Moreland is going to play first base. Otherwise,
right.
Michael Chavis would be ahead of him. You've also seen Christian Vasquez make some starts at first base. Dalbec is not going to play third base. He's not going to play over Devers. Mm. He's not going to be the DH over J.D. Martinez. So do you really want to start his service time clock and have him sit on the bench for 25 games?
It doesn't make sense.
Or would you want to send him home after another good year and say, congratulations, you've had a great year, get ready for next season.
Go home on a high note. And,
you know, or do you send him to the Fall League and you say, you know, hey, let's continue to work on what you've done throughout the year because what you've done is really good. You've cut down your strikeout rate. You've raised your walk rate. Your power still plays. You know, he's really developed into a guy who they think highly of within the organization. You know, just because he is not getting a call up here in September, I don't think that means that they're sour on him in any way. I just think it acknowledges the reality that, you know, there's a little bit of a logjam at the positions that he would play.
So let's take a look a little bit ahead here at the Red Sox schedule. They've got the home run bashing Minnesota Twins coming into town tonight for four games?
Three games.
Three games.
Yep.
And with Rhode Island's own Rocco Baldelli at the helm. Boy, the Twins are quite the story this year, right? I mean, they are firmly in grasp of the AL Central. I think they're up by like six games. Rocco's first year as a manager, and
They're up by six on Cleveland in the loss column.
In the loss column, right
now,
and they've hit a few home runs this year too, Bill.
Holy cow! You're not kidding. They come into tonight having already broken the major league record in a season for home runs,
and then we got a month to play.
They have 25 games left. They've hit 269 home runs. The major league record was set just last year by the Yankees. The true Bronx Bombers, as we call them at the time. Minnesota has 11 different players who have double-digit home runs. It's really an embarrassment of riches. You look at the lineup for you fantasy players out there, Bill Corey, I know you're one of them.
Yeah.
You look at guys like Max Kepler, Nelson Cruz, they're having career years. Mitch Garver has 26 home runs out of the catcher spot. Miguel Sano has 26 home runs from third base. You know, just a lineup of mashers there. You know, who can really ruin your day in a three-game series.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a real test for the Red Sox pitching staff, starting with Rick Porcello on Tuesday night. He threw a really good game against them in Minnesota. I think it was seven scoreless on two hits. You know, really controlled the Twins in a win there.
Yep.
The Red Sox took two out of three at Minnesota earlier this year. That was in June. Played a really good series. The only game they lost, I think, was in 17 innings, I want to say.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
You know, really, really late one, which, you know, ended up with Hector Velasquez in the game, you know, throwing the last four or five innings. He was the last man standing. You know, but the Sox played very well in those three games. You know, I thought they were pretty solid. And, you know, that was at one of those points in the season, Bill, where we were looking for a reason to sort of get behind them. We were looking for that turning point series. We were saying,
and we thought maybe that could have been it.
You know, this could be it.
Yeah.
The Twins are off to a great start. They have the best record in the American League.
Right.
You know, this is where the Red Sox sort of take off. And here we are in the first week of September. We're still waiting for that.
Well, and they had a good series, as you mentioned. But, yeah, it just it's been a strange season, Bill, because, you know, they have shown flashes of the team they were last year, and there were times when I thought, I'm sure other Red Sox fans thought, this is it, this is where they turn around, this is where they put things together.
Right.
They're going to stop playing like they played last year, and they just weren't, for whatever reason, able to sustain any of that momentum. They would have really heartbreaking and disappointing losses and just never get on the kind of run that they needed to get on. And now, as we've detailed here earlier, you know, they're down to 25 games. They've got three teams ahead of them in the wild card. So, you know, they really need to go on a run where they're playing, you know, 25 games left. So you figure, you know, are they going to go 20-5? You know, probably not.
Probably what they need.
Right. But they need to sort of come close to that.
Right.
Because you figure these other teams aren't just going to go on these long losing streaks. And so even if they play 500, you need to be much better than that. So moving forward here in terms of the schedule. So they've got obviously they've got the Twins this week, and then they've got the Yankees coming to town. You know, it's weird. Every win helps, but you know, you're not going to catch the Yankees, obviously, division. So, you know, you just need to win ball games and hope that Tampa Bay and Oakland loses games. And unfortunately, you only see one of those teams for the rest of the year, I think. It's just Tampa Bay.
Correct.
So you don't have much of a chance to sort of control your own destiny, so to speak, by beating the teams you need to beat. Because in September, unless I'm missing something, I think they're only playing Tampa Bay.
No, you're right.
In terms of the teams ahead of them. Obviously, the Yankees are ahead of them, but the division is lost, essentially. So.
No, you've been done with Oakland for a long time.
Yep.
You finished up with Cleveland a couple weeks ago, that three-game series. Out there
right.
At Progressive Field. You have four games with Tampa. I believe it's starting on September 20th. Those will be at Tropicana Field. And you know, when you play those, depending on this upcoming stretch, three with the Twins, four with the Yankees, three with Toronto, two with the Phillies. Then you're back home for the Giants, I believe.
Yeah, that should be a fun series.
Mike Yastrzemski will be here.
Yeah.
Carl Yastrzemski is planning on attending at least one of those games. That'll be
for only an inning or two, I'm sure.
Well, you know,
Yaz can't be bothered to stay for the whole game.
That'll be a fun sort of sidebar to that series.
All right.
And then you go to Tampa for four, and
yep.
You know, that's going to be you hope at the very least that by September 20th that those will still be critical games. You
sure.
Hope that those will still mean something. That's the goal for the Red Sox. But like you said, you know, we've been talking about the math pretty continuously on this podcast. You're looking at a stretch where you get 25 games. If you play 20-5 baseball, which is really good, you still need those other teams to go 14-11,
yeah.
Which is a little bit below the standard that they've set to this point.
Sure.
You know, if they go 16-9 or 17-8 or something like that, they're effectively going to close you out.
Mm.
You know, and that's the notion of time and the thinking that time is growing short on this team. That's why we've talked about it, you know, probably over the last month or a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes more pronounced as the games get less and less.
And I know we touched upon this the last time we talked, but boy, it would be such a disappointment, and it looks like this is what the reality will be, but it would be such a disappointment if they miss the playoffs because, as we've said, you know, this is a team loaded with young stars. This was not a team that they threw together with free agents for a sort of a one-and-done ride. After last season, you know, you got the sense that this team should be around for a while, compete for a while, be able to get into the postseason for years to come. You've got young stars like Bogarts and Betts and Devers. And you had a pitching staff that I think you felt pretty good about going into the year with Sale and Price at the top of the rotation. You know, I think you're always encouraged or, you know, you have high hopes for Erod because of his stuff. You know, Porcello had a decent year last year, so you're thinking, well, he's a veteran. Maybe he'll, you know, just have another decent year. That didn't happen.
Sure.
But, you know, the bullpen troubles, the starting pitching troubles, it really unraveled what could have been, should have been, another strong season. And again, you know, we're talking about this, Bill, and we have a sort of a first world problem. It's not like they're a losing team, that they're well above 500 here.
Right.
But, you know, to win the World Series and win 108 games and then not make the playoffs the next season with essentially the same roster is hugely disappointing.
Well, I'm not certain who said this, and maybe one of our podcast listeners will tweet at us or perhaps email us. Comparison is the thief of joy, as the old saying goes.
Yeah.
You're comparing this Red Sox season to last season.
Right, it's a fair comparison because it's the same team.
It is. You know, and as we found over the course of 5 months, it was probably never going to be that good again.
No.
They've never been that good before.
No.
You know, you add on to that you're comparing what they've spent on this roster compared to what other teams have spent.
Right.
You know, and you're looking and you're saying, you know, $240 million should buy more than this.
Sure.
It should be more than 11 games over 500 on September 3rd. It should not be a team that misses the playoffs. All those things are fair. You know, I would look at this team and I would say that, you know, it, probably, and we'll save this for the autopsy edition, but the biggest area of underperformance compared to your investment has been the starting rotation.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. You've locked up these guys long-term, whether it's David Price, who opted into his last 4 years. He's been on the injured list twice here. When he has pitched, he's actually been pretty good. But you haven't gotten a full season out of him.
Right.
Chris Sale, who starts his 5-year extension next year, has really struggled. You know, he's going to have the worst ERA of his career. He ends the season hurt. Nathan Eovaldi only made a handful of starts at the beginning of the season before he got hurt. Rick Porcello's having the worst season of his career by ERA. Really, the only guy who you can look at and say this guy performed to or above expectations is Eduardo Rodriguez,
right,
who's been a workhorse for them, you know, and who's actually shown growth in terms of going deeper into games, being more consistent, not having that sort of blow-up start where he's out in 3 1/3 and has thrown 110 pitches. You know, he's cleaned a lot of that up and has made a nice evolution as a guy who is getting into his later 20s. You know, certainly somebody who you can feel good about going forward. The biggest disappointment there, Bill, obviously, is, you know, not only what they invested in these guys, but how much longer they're tied to these guys. You look at, aside from Porcello, you have each of those four other pitchers under control for each of the next two seasons.
Right.
You know, so you're thinking this is sort of going to be the group, you know, barring a big splash trade or something very creative, this is going to be the group. So you're looking at them this season and you're thinking how much or if they can improve,
right,
going into next season. And I think it's only natural at this point, based on what we've seen over the last 5 months, to sort of take the pessimistic view and say you could have a couple guys here who are on the downside now. You know, whether it's Price, who's getting into his mid-30s, or Sale, who everyone has looked at his entire career and said, well, his mechanics and his arm, and it's only a matter of time before his body breaks down. Are we starting to see that now, you know, as he turns 30? You know, you're looking at Nathan Eovaldi, and you're thinking, this guy's had two Tommy John surgeries already. Is he another guy who's going to break down and always be on the IL? So losing sort of exposes all that. Comparing this to last season and comparing this to what other teams have spent sort of exposes all that. It heightens those criticisms, and that's how we find ourselves where we are right now.
Well, as you know, spending the most money doesn't guarantee anything, but at the very least, it comes with expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the expectations is that you at least are playing into October.
Correct.
And it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So that, again, it's hugely disappointing. But we are really building up this obituary edition of the Twin Bills. I hope it lives up to the...
it's going to be a doozy.
Whenever that is, it's probably 2 weeks away. I'm going to say it's 2 weeks away. You know, if they tread water for another week or so, I don't think we can officially rule them out. But if they're still basically 5 games out 2 weeks from now, it's pretty much done. So, so before we wrap up the Twin Bills this week, Bill, I want to touch upon the Pawtucket Red Sox, who finished their season last night at McCoy Stadium.
Yeah.
Not a very good year for the Paw Sox. They went 59-81. They finished last in the International League North Division.
Yep.
But more importantly, it is the penultimate season, as we journalists or headline writers like to say.
Yes.
For the Paw Sox in Pawtucket.
That's next to last.
That's next to last, if you're wondering. Right. You're next to last.
Yes.
So they are under contract for one more year in Pawtucket before they open up a new stadium called Polar Park out in Worcester. So the attendance last night, I believe, was around 5,000. Now, the Paw Sox have not had the good fortune of good weather this year. They had something like...
I think they had 7 home rainouts.
Yeah, I think they won. I want to say they had like 11 overall or something like that. I mean, it's,
yeah.
But 7 home rainouts. And, you know, it would be it's going to be interesting for me to see next year, because obviously there is, you know, the Paw Sox are one of those issues in Rhode Island. It's like, you know, It's like the presidential race. You either, you know, you have a strong feeling about one person or the other person, and you maybe don't tolerate the other person's views as much. You know, on one hand, you've got people who say, you know, but baseball is dying. We don't want to subsidize public stadiums. And as much as I like the Pawtucket Red Sox, I'm not going to spend tax money on helping them build a stadium. So, you know, sorry to see you go, but there, you know, there's the exit to Worcester. And then you've got the other side who feel like it is such a Rhode Island institution. It brings people into the state. It brings people to spend money into the state, that the project was not only to play baseball, but sort of the anchor of a development district in Pawtucket. Obviously, it would have been backed by some public money and some public guarantees that some people were uneasy about. But I think, and you can count me and I think you in the group that feels it will be a shame when the Pawtucket Red Sox are no longer a Rhode Island institution.
I've said from the start that I don't think people are going to realize what a shame this is until after it's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like one of those things where, let's say you have a great relationship with somebody, and, you know, at the time when it sort of runs its course and gets near the end, you think, you know, this can't really continue. We shouldn't go on. It's probably time to end this.
Right.
You know, and maybe it's only natural to think a little later, you know, geez, that was a pretty good thing. Maybe we could have worked on a couple things. Maybe could. Yeah. I'm not speaking from personal experience.
I was going to say, is this
for those who might be,
are you opening up the Bill Koch diary here for
not,
us?
It's not my TED talk. I haven't had anything to drink yet today. Otherwise, it'd be flowing out. That's the after the podcast version,
ah, yes.
Bill Corey,
okay.
As you know.
That's the Twin Bills Uncensored.
That's correct. The Twin Bill sponsored by Murphy's,
right.
Our neighbors across the street.
Right.
Faithfully executed by whoever. But no, I always felt like it was going to be one of those things that, you know, you would look back at and you would say, man, you know, we really had a good thing there. And certainly there could have been a deal reached. If there was enough creativity and enough initiative on all sides.
Yeah.
I think that there were mistakes made along the way by the team, certainly by state leadership in government, you know, and all of those things sort of compounded. It's like if you ever read anything about a plane crash, it's not one mistake that crashes the plane. It's a series of mistakes,
right,
that crashes the plane. And I think it's a series of mistakes that have allowed the Paw Sox to get to the point where they're going to leave after 2020 and go to Worcester and play in this gleaming new stadium at the heart of this development district. You still have, you know, I sort of got engaged on social media last night with a few people, and you know, you still have just so much misinformation out there,
right,
you know, about what the deal was going to be and how it was going to be executed and how much was being spent. And, you know, I just think that you go back to 38 Studios before that and how much that poisoned the well.
Sure. Yeah, that did not help.
You know, the initial offer by the team when they were discussing a stadium in Providence.
Yeah.
Which is non-existent now, but that wouldn't have been a good deal for the state. I fully believe that would have been a mistake. This modified version that would have kept the team in Pawtucket, that would have taken over the old Apex site, certainly looked like a good deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
You had team owners pledging $45 million to spend at minimum. Show me a development project in Pawtucket where folks are going to spend $45 million. Hasn't seen one in a long time.
Right.
Now, granted, the state's going to kick in some bonds, and so is the city, but is it worth the cost to redevelop that site? You and I drive by it every day.
Mm.
What's going on there? Nothing. It's been vacant,
right,
for however many years. You know,
mm-hmm,
this was a chance,
yeah,
to spark something, to provide an anchor, to say, we're staying here. Build around us. You know, I had a couple folks question the history of McCoy Stadium and why shouldn't they refurbish it? It's been the site of, you know, so many historic achievements. Well, so was Yankee Stadium.
Mm.
So was Busch Stadium. They'd outlived their usefulness. You know, they'd sort of gone past their expiration dates. And, you know, no ballpark had more history than Yankee Stadium. if you can bulldoze that to the ground and start over, then you could do that anywhere.
Well, sure. And the deal with McCoy, too, is, you know, they recognize that the future for them wasn't just a ballpark. They recognize that the future for them was a ballpark as part of a district that could attract other development. And, I mean, you and I have been to McCoy many times, and we both know there's really no area around McCoy where you can develop. I mean, it's an old stadium stuck in the middle of a residential and commercial district. There isn't, you know, there isn't any room to grow there. You could refurbish and build a gem of a ballpark there, but it would still just be a ballpark in the middle of a residential and commercial district. And that, and you know, I think to their credit, they recognize that wasn't really going to cut it. What you need going forward here is to make the ballpark one of several reasons why people want to go to that site.
Right.
But you know, at the risk of us just beating a dead horse here, what I'm wondering is, what do you think the attendance next year at McCoy will be? Because it will be the last year, and I wonder if people will be a little bit more nostalgic about it, even if you were against sort of, you know, them staying because you didn't want the state to get involved and stuff. You know, I think hopefully people are going to realize, hey, this is our last chance to go to McCoy Stadium and see the Pawtucket Red Sox. And I just hope that they take that opportunity, because as you and I both have said, you know, the state's going to miss them when they're gone.
I think in a perfect world, that's exactly what will happen. You know, I look at attendance this year. They average just over 5,200 in the 2013 season, which isn't that long ago. They were over 7,800.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you've cut your attendance by a third.
Yeah.
In the span of 6 years. You look at Saturday nights where they have fireworks every Saturday. Those will still sell.
They do very well on those nights.
You get decent weather, those nights will sell.
And to their credit, they always have great marketing campaigns. I think they basically opened up the park free for teenagers 16 and under. Kids 16 and under for the last couple of homestands here. So,
right.
You know, they do their part to make it affordable. It's free parking. You know, we've gone over this many times. You don't have to spend a fortune when you go to McCoy Stadium.
No, I just, you know, the counter to that is I just think this has gotten so venomous from the opposition side, the sort of, you know, there's this great temptation to say, oh, well, screw them. You know, let them go to Worcester.
Right.
How dare they put their hand in my pocket and ask for taxpayer money? And that's sort of an ugliness, I think, that's compounded from 38 Studios. And it's carried into this.
No doubt.
You know, and I think that, you know, just venturing into psychology a little bit, I think that folks being frustrated with state government and their inability to do things in a clean and efficient and productive fashion, it gets projected onto projects like this, you know, and sort of failures like this, you know, a sort of civic failure, like being unable to retain the Paw Sox or build a new ballpark or do it in a fashion that people feel is above board and the best that you can do it. And, you know, you look at some other places and you watch them build stadiums or build downtown buildings. I mean, we've had an argument about the 195 land and Fane Tower, which you can follow on our news pages. You know, that's been going on for however many weeks and months and, you know, verging on years.
A year, yeah.
You know, you can't build a large residential and commercial structure in the middle of a city.
Right.
Which is pretty much made for residential and commercial structures.
Right.
You have pushback from that. You have, you know, millions and millions of dollars of outside investment that's being offered that folks have no faith is going to be taken into, you know, good custody and executed well.
Yeah.
You know, and so you take that element and you add it into sports and into baseball, which a lot of people are not fans of, and there are a lot of people out there who are not sports
right,
fans.
Right, and that's the
and they say this is even more wasteful.
Right, right. And that's the other side of it, too. I mean, there clearly are a lot of people who are not sports fans who don't really appreciate or value McCoy Stadium at all, and I get that. You know, there's a lot of people who aren't fans of Trinity Rep or PPAC either, and, you know, you know, I think hopefully next season that people can put some of that aside and at least go out and support the team in their last year before they go to Worcester, because, you know, for you and I, and we've talked about this many, you know, that place was really the home of a lot of great memories over the years. You know, you got to see ball players up close. You had a great seat, usually, no matter where you sat. You got to interact with the players, you know, get the ball signed, all that stuff. You know, and that's going to be missed. I really think that's going to be missed.
Yeah, agreed.
So anyway, not to end on a downer here, but the ultimate downer is when we do the obituary edition of the Twin Bills. That's coming.
Yeah. So you continue to count them out. It's beautiful.
It's
a prolonged tease,
you know,
I would love to
be wrong here. I would love to say, oh my God, they're going to go on a run and we're going to get to the postseason and stuff. They haven't done anything all year that's instilled confidence that they're going to do that. But anyway, Bill, we are going to be here till the bitter end with the Red Sox before we
again, he forecasts a bitter end.
No,
here. Not a good end, right. But a bitter end.
Well, no matter when the end comes, it'll be bitter unless they win the World Series. And I'm going to go on record saying that's not going to happen.
Yes.
But anyway, we will do this again in a week, Bill, before all of our thoughts turn to football. We have a few more weeks of baseball, and we'll see. We'll see if the Red Sox can surprise us and maybe make a run and keep us interested. So anyway, thanks again for another sterling edition of the Twin Bills, and we will do this in a week.
Thanks, Bill.